Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we got a lot of range in this first half. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, very interesting takes. He's the guy who's curing all the people with the coronavirus. So you want to listen to what this guy has to say, because he is a renegade and he's talking about stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else. And then there's Ken Jennings. So a lot of range in this first half. First, I'll tell you about BetterHelp. Life stressful. God knows it is stressful these days. And you may need a little help. And, you know, people are talking about being healthy, eating right, physically moving around, getting exercise. You got to get a little help in the emotional department every once in a while, too. BetterHelp, it's online counseling. Licensed counselors who specialize in issues including depression, anxiety, complicated relationships, grief, trauma, anger, and more. Schedule a secure video or phone session, plus securely exchange unlimited messages. Just fill out a questionnaire about your needs, get matched with a counselor, and start communicating in under 24 hours. If you're unhappy with your counselor, you can easily request a new therapist anytime. No additional charge. Take care of yourself with BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
Adam Carolla listeners will get 10% off their first month with discount code Carolla. That's BetterHelp.com/Carolla. Why not get help? BetterHelp.com/Carolla.
We've got our own smart speaker daily flash briefing sponsored by NetSuite by Oracle on your Amazon and Google devices. Easy to find on your Google Home devices. Just say, hey, Google, play the Adam Carolla Show daily brief. For your Amazon Alexa devices, just go to the skills and games in the menu and add the Adam Carolla Show daily brief. Then just say, hey, Alexa, play the Adam Carolla Show daily brief. Once you're set up, you can get daily clips from the show brought to you by our great partner, NetSuite. Right, Dawson?
There's a ton of uncertainty right now. NetSuite reduces it by giving you visibility and control. NetSuite by Oracle gives you a full picture of your business in real time. Get your free guide now at netsuite.com/Adam. That's netsuite.com/Adam. From Adam's house and Gina's house and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the greatest Jeopardy player of all time, Ken Jennings. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, Dave Damashek's here for good sports, and we'll get a visit from Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. And now, reminding you that the best way to spend your stimulus check is to pre-order several copies of I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, Mandy. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing with a friend. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
I consider myself a nerd.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a little trivia competition with Ken Jennings and Paul Bryan, no slouch in the trivia department either. I believe, first off, been on some game shows and won some cash on some game shows. But also, don't you have a trivia group as well?
Or maybe I group is the right term? I have done trivia groups. I've done trivia groups. I don't think I have one, a regular
one. You're that nerd!
That's right, I am that nerd. Hold on.
You're that nerd!
Yeah, I was on two game shows, Beat the Geeks on Comedy Central, a short-lived but fun game show where I did win the show and won the contest. And I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in late 2008, I guess. Yeah, something like that. And won $100,000. No, Ken Jennings, of course. But Ken Jennings is a minor hero of mine. He's pretty fantastic, and I look up to that guy.
Well, Brian, I don't want to be a one-upper, but I, too, have been on two game shows. I was on Bingo America, hosted by America's Patrick Duffy, lost in the lightning round. And I was on America Says, which is basically Family Feud, also lost in the lightning round.
I was on a game show, or attempted to be on a game show, as a civilian. One was The Dating Game.
What?
And
did you win?
No, it was a very interesting insight to my psyche. I don't know how to conduct myself in a relationship or the world. I really don't. I come from a bizarre family that didn't talk or hug or convey ideas or anything. So I don't know like what's good and what's bad and what you can do and can't do. And look no further than when Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks wanted me to escort her to the Grammys. And I was like, can I do that? I have a girlfriend. You can't do that. And the gay guy who worked for my manager went, of course you can do it. They do it all the time. And I went, okay. And then it turns out Lynette was pissed. And this time when I went on the dating game, or I wanted to go on the dating game, my girlfriend at the time, I thought that's what you do if you're an up-and-coming comedian or personality. Right. You get some FaceTime. You don't have sex with the woman. You guys go to Palm Desert for the weekend and have
with a chaperone.
Have a date shake at Hadley's, you know?
Yeah.
But so I then got on to the dating game and then went home and told my girlfriend, Stephanie, hey, guess what? And she was like, are you nuts? And I'm like, oh, okay.
But so that's then not how it's done.
My other girlfriend, Cynthia, I gave her Tori Amos's flowers. Again, I don't know any of this stuff. I have no idea how people are going to react to anything. That's part of coming from
that one. I would actually be stoked to get Tori Amos's flowers.
Okay.
Same.
But all the others are insane.
Is Chris, now the doctor was on hold, but now he's not on hold?
Yeah, he missed Sanchik, but I saw him in the virtual waiting room and then he signed off. But he's emailing me now, so expect him any minute. We'll just have him on. I'll let you know when he comes on.
I hope you guys are sitting down, but I don't have either one of the bios in front of me. I just have some commercials, but I don't have any bios. So you guys can help me out with that. So not planning on talking about this, but a story I haven't told in 8 years. When I was 25, I went and tried out for the dating game. And, they played a little mock-up game. You answer your questions. I was good on my feet, you know, and had good sort of improv chops and was funny and blah, blah, blah. And there was about 25 guys. We're all sitting in one room, I think, on a lot. God, somewhere around KTLA, on the KTLA lot. And we're just sitting there. And at a certain point, when we were done, the woman said, all right, listen, you guys were all fantastic. We'll all be calling you. We have all your numbers and great job. We'll see you guys on the show. And people were like starting to file out. And then she went, there's a couple little things with a couple little paperwork here. Mark J, hang out. Adam C, you know, hang out. Bob Johnson, hang out. There's some snafus with the paperwork. And as everyone was filing out, I just went, she's just saying that because you losers aren't going to get a phone call. And everyone started laughing. And then the door shut and she yelled at me. She was like, hey, asshole, that's exactly what
that's
I was
exactly
doing.
My word. They still do that. I tried out for a lot of game shows, ones that never hit the air, one of the pilots and whatever. And there were a couple times where they, okay, you guys are good. A couple of you hold back. These people hold back. That's still the technique.
And you have to understand, I physically and incapable of filling out paperwork. So when she goes, hey, Adam, hang out. We got a couple of problems. That goes right to my weakness. Like, oh, my God, I screwed something up. I put the address where my age was supposed to be. Right. And I just
well,
I thought
you're also physically incapable of stifling a joke.
Right.
Yeah. So you had no chance.
I said it to me. I was cracking wise. Like I was making fun of these guys. That's exactly what happened. All right. Dr. Zelenko is on. Again, you guys look at his bio because don't have it in front of me. But
I have him running it into you.
I was very interested in Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. Doctor?
Hello.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Hi. Nice to meet you, too.
You're in New York City?
I am in upstate New York, Monroe, New York.
Monroe, New York. So let's talk about your experience with the coronavirus and just tell us what you've been up to over the last few weeks and months.
I'm a primary care doctor for a community of 35,000 people that live within a square mile
in
New York. So it's a very high population density. Mm-hmm. And I knew that when the virus would hit our community, it would spread very quickly. And I was trying to prepare for that. And I scoured kind of the world research, what other countries have done. Mm-hmm. And I studied what the Far East, China, South Korea were doing. They were using hydroxychloroquine and zinc with some success. And then I saw what Dudier Raoul, I think that's how you say his name, in Marseille, France, was using hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. But that's information I had. And my colleagues at the ICU and Lenox Hill Hospital were also playing around with hydroxychloroquine. So I said to myself, well, what is the whole world doing? They're fighting this World War III, I call it, because 182 countries are fighting the same virus. And the whole approach has been to build more respirators. There was zero emphasis on developing interventions or treatments to prevent people from getting on respirators.
Right.
So I decided that I'm going to try to figure something out. So I combined all the information I had, and I made a three-drug regimen using hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc. I played with the dosing a little bit to make it less intense for the outpatient setting. And then I started seeing, then the virus came to my community. And the first 500 tests that I did or so, 65% of the tests were positive.
You have dealt with a group of 1,450 people approximately?
So my practice over the last 6 weeks has seen 3,000 patient visits, but out of those, we diagnosed 1,450 with the coronavirus. When I say it's my team, it's not only me. I have four other PAs and other doctors, but it's my practice. So we diagnosed that amount, and I subdivided those patients into two groups, higher and low risk. And that's important because the low risk patients have a 99% chance of getting better without any intervention. So there's no need to treat them.
So define low risk.
Less than the age of 60 with no medical problems.
Okay.
High risk is higher than the age of 60 with even mild symptoms. Less than the age of 60 with symptoms, but if a person has medical problems like cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that, or anyone who just looks sick, toxic in my office, those are the high-risk patients, short of breath. Right. And those patients have a 5 to 10% chance of dying. So if you look at what's going on in the hospitals, those are the patients that are in the hospital.
So, sorry. Is it if you're under 60 and in good health, is this almost nothing statistically to you? Or how would you describe it?
Let me define success here. Or is not to die, that's good, and not to get on the respirator, and not to end up in the hospital.
Right.
People are miserable with this infection. It's a miserable virus. It makes people really upset for 2-3 weeks. But that's not what I'm treating.
Right.
So in that group, less than 60 with no medical problems, you have a 99% chance of not dying.
Right.
And of not being in a respirator.
Right.
That's my focus, you see. So
can I ask a respirator related question? Are they causing long-term damage, or is there residual effects to a respirator? And is there a reason we should really not want to get on a respirator beside the obvious reasons?
Do you know what the coronavirus does to the lungs?
No.
Essentially, it kills the cells. The biological debris becomes cement. It falls into the alveoli, which is the lung structure, so to speak. Think of the lungs as like a tree. So you have branches and leaves. So the leaves are the alveoli, the most important part. It plugs them up. And then the real fun begins when the immune system wakes up and causes a napalm, essentially, to come into your lungs and just eats your lungs from the inside. So it's not a respirator issue. You know,
right. So the respirator, I'd heard stories about respirators causing damage, but that's not your experience.
ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is the main reason why people end up on respirators, has a 60-70% mortality rate. If someone gets it, they're screwed. They're dead. And even those that do survive are permanently damaged.
In an interview I heard you do on Dennis Prager's program, you were talking about arresting the disease, the virus, before it made its way to the lungs. Is that correct?
Listen, if your paper towel in your kitchen went on fire, would you put it out, or you would wait for the whole house to go on fire? If someone has appendicitis, do you treat it right away or you wait for it to rupture?
Right.
If someone has influenza virus, do you treat it right away within 48 hours with Tamiflu or do you wait for it to get out of control? Someone has strep throat, do you treat it right away or develop? You wait until you develop rheumatic heart disease and need open heart surgery to replace a valve?
Hold on, I want to work
on. I need 10 or 12 more of these.
If you had a bald tire on your car, would you wait for a blowout or would you get the thing replaced?
Oh, when you have COVID-19, we don't do anything until a person is half dead on a respirator, and then the government says, okay, now you can use the drugs, where they don't work. By the way, there are studies that just came out that the media is jumping on, that the VA study that came out that shows that the drugs didn't work and maybe even killed more people. And they're right. I agree. Hydroxychloroquine kills people. If you use it in a population that has a 70% mortality rate inside the hospital on a respirator, you better believe it doesn't work. But what they're doing, they say, drug doesn't work. They generalize it to all settings and say that this drug shouldn't be used. It's so dishonest, criminal, and nefarious. It's disgusting. These are garbage studies designed to fail, to make these drugs less appealing for nefarious reasons. One is a political reason, because the president supports it, so they don't want to give him a win. And number two, it screws the drug companies, because the treatment that I've developed costs $12 with no profit margin. And they're working on very expensive vaccine and therapies, which is a poke in the eye to a multi-billion dollar industry. That wasn't my intention. I don't like people dying. So all of a sudden, you have Adam Schiff just came out against this drug. You know, that's a sign that it must be working, because whatever he says, you have to assume the opposite.
Well, can I say this to everyone who's listening and the good doctor as well, and people can agree or disagree, but here's sort of my take. This is a very good example of the right and the left, and neither one may be your friend. Your friend is sort of the middle, I have found, which is first, as it pertains to this drug, you found a cheap, easy way, effective way to take care of this and sort of nip it in the bud. And now the big drug companies, big pharma, has a problem with it. They're spinning it a certain way. They want to make it less effective and even deadly. So because they've dumped billions of dollars into something that they need to return their profit on. Right. So that's kind of the ugly right side of this. And then the ugly left side of this is the president said, hey, this stuff may be effective, and now we must destroy him and his word. So there's an ugly right and an ugly left. And I don't think either one of them really cares about you in the middle. The drug companies want to do what they want to do. The media wants to do, or the politicians want to do what they want to do with Trump. And we suffer.
This virus kills the right and the left equally. It kills Democrats and Republicans equally. It's not really a political problem. It's a human problem. The amount of suffering and death that I've seen in the last 5-6 weeks, if anyone would spend a day in the front lines and tell people's families, I'm sorry, your father just died for no good reason. The scale of the tragedy and the catastrophe is hard to understand for, and this is, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, pencil pushing Ivy League idiots who said, and I'll give you an example. Let's say Washington, D.C. is being carpet bombed, yeah? Mm-hmm. So would it make sense for Dr. Fauci to say, we need to do a study to see which bullets work the best? It's going to take 4 months.
Right.
Or would it make sense to use any bullet you have to shoot down the plane, even if it's not the best bullet?
Yeah. Well, there's a saying which is the best is the enemy of good, or some version of that. But we're living in a society where we say one death is unacceptable. We need everything to be tested, and nothing can have any degree of chance or danger in it. And it's like, hey, the shit is going down, people. Well,
Let me talk in the language of these idiots. So I'm coming out with a study. It's called a meta-analysis. Not only my data, but the data of other physicians like me, around 2,000 cases. It's coming out within a week. It's done through FDA compliant and HIPAA compliant software. It is going to be a high-end study, probably published in the best journals, that shows a 95% reduction in death.
Right.
The doctor in France, his data, also in around 2,000 patients, shows a 95% reduction in death. The government of Brazil, the president of Brazil is a fan of mine. He follows me on social media. So he adopted the protocols 4 weeks ago in a few hospitals and clinics, and they published a study last week, which I can present, that reduced death by 95%. So I have a way to resolve the respiratory crisis. Treat people so they don't get sick, so they don't need respirators.
Problem give solved, us right? Give us your protocol, because I've been talking a lot and we've sort of even skipped right past what you would do. So if you saw a patient and they showed symptoms of this, what would you do? What's your protocol?
Well, tell me more about the patient. Let's talk about you. How old are you?
Okay. Matinee idol, good looks, feared by men, adored by women.
How old are you?
I'm 55.
Okay. You have any medical problems?
No.
Okay. So, and you have a fever and a cough and you lost your smell.
Yes.
And I know for sure that you have coronavirus because your girlfriend had it or whatever.
Right.
And I may do the test, but it's going to take 3 days to get the results. You better believe I'm not going to wait 72 hours to let the fire get out of control. So I will treat you based on clinical judgment. But you know what? You're young and healthy. I would tell you, you know what? You probably don't need medication. You'll get better without it. Give me a call in 2 days if you're not, and then we'll deal with it. But right now, I think statistically, you're going to get better without medication.
All right. Well, now let's say it's 10 years from now and I'm 65.
So listen, my friend, you have a 10% chance of dying and it's not so good. So I'd rather initiate treatment right now because then that will reduce the risk of you getting on a respirator by 95%.
Well, why don't we take a test and we'll wait and see if it's positive or not?
We could do the test, but there's three problems with the test. One is it takes 72 hours to get back. So you're wasting crucial time where the intervention actually matters, number one. Number two, we don't have enough tests. I ran out of tests half the time. And number three, and this is the real problem, it has a negative predictive value of 70%. What that means is when the test says it's negative, how certain am I that that's true? And that test is only 70% accurate. So in other words, if it says it's negative, there's a 30% chance that it's actually positive and the test is wrong. Mm. It's a garbage test.
So as long as we're doing the role playing and we're 10 years in the future, I've been divorced for 3.5 years. I just bought a Corvette and your receptionist is really hot. Could I have her phone number?
For Viagra. No, first I'll give you a prescription for Viagra and then you can have her phone number.
Yeah, 65. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Doctor, so if I'm understanding correctly, that your regimen of medication works, the hydroxychloroquine specifically, works better on people who are not yet super sick and obviously have a worse outcome on people who are super sick. What would be the point of no return? Like, you know what I mean? Where's the point at which you say, all right, this is going to work, or I'm going to put you on it, or you should think about doing this, or should we be taking it preventatively.
Prophylactically.
Exactly.
Right.
So actually the prophylactic question, I'm actually experimenting with it now. The ultra high risk patients, like nursing home patients that have a 20% death rate, or first doctors, nurses, EMS, it seems that the severity of this infection is dose related, exposure related. The more you're exposed to it, the worse the symptoms, the higher the viral load. So these patients or people that are the first responders, we need them. They're crucial. So I've been experimenting and prophylaxing them. And so far, I had really good results. No one that I've given the drugs preemptively has gotten the infection. What's interesting, there's a rheumatologist in Florida that has 800 patients who have lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, and they're all on hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil. None of them got the infection. It's unbelievable. So, but that's anecdotal. I can't use that to, but it's interesting. Let's put
right,
it
right.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I just a quick technical question that you may have feelings on. Sometimes you hear you catch this thing when you shelter at home. and you're in a crowd or amongst people, other people say, don't go outside. That's where you catch it. Do you have any evidence or any thoughts about contracting it and sort of where you contract it?
I want you to contract it.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
Because it's impossible not to. Are you ready to live inside your room for the rest of your life?
No.
So
let me finish. This is important.
Yes.
Everyone is meant to get this infection or will get this infection, and everyone has to develop an immunity to it. So the only way that's going to happen is by your immune system overcoming the infection. And most people do. The problem is there's a subset of high-risk patients who die. And up to this point, we have had no way to stop that from happening. So what do? We shut down the economy. You know this flatten the curve garbage? It's a curve of death. So flattening basically means just spread out the death.
Right.
I want to eviscerate this curve. I want to throw a hydrogen bomb on this curve. And the way to do that is to have effective interventions that prevent people from dying.
Right. So your triple cocktail, for lack of a better term, seems to be super effective, but you have to get on it early and often, not wait until the body's ravaged by this virus. So what are your, and unfortunately, it's all been sort of politicized and now we're having difficulty getting at the truth, but it's hard to argue with your batting average and your particular patients. So I would tend to listen to you versus the news or the politicians.
Well, what people are going to say is I'm making it up, or how do we know, where's the data? So I'm presenting the data. You know, I've been doing this for 3.5 weeks. I got criticized that I haven't presented the data. Do you know that Dr. Dudier in France has 800 people on his team? I have 5. I've been seeing 100 patients a day. Well, I mean, there's not enough. I've been working 21 hours a day. So I've been trying to generate the data and present it as quickly as possible. I've been dealing with Mark Meadows and Stephen Hahn. You know who these people are, right?
Yeah, are they in the cabinet of the presidency?
Mark Meadows is the chief of staff of the president,
right.
And Stephen Hahn is the head of the FDA.
Right.
And I'm dealing with, they called me. I'm dealing with them directly. That's how important. And, you know, governments have called me. The government of Israel has adopted my protocols. I've been fighting with their minister of health for 3 weeks until he got the coronavirus, and then that resolved everything.
Changed his tune.
Funny how that works. Can I ask a quick question?
The government of Ukraine has asked me to lead their task force. Honduras called me, Philippines. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happened. Why? Because this is a global problem.
Yeah, so the shelter in thing for you is not the strategy to combat it. It's to...
Well, I understood why they did it, because we can't all get sick at once.
Right.
And it overwhelms everything. I understood that idea, but it's only useful if you do something in that time. If
right.
you come up with something that is useful, otherwise you're just delaying the inevitable.
Right.
You know how many people committed suicide during this time from social isolation or from financial ruin?
Yeah, we never examine this sort of byproducts of our SNAP decisions.
You know, people still get heart attacks and they get strokes and they need surgeries. How about all the care that is not being gotten because of the system being overwhelmed?
Right.
You know, how about the 20% nursing home deaths that are not being reported in the media, in the numbers that are showing?
Doctor, all three of your ingredients are cheap, old. I don't mean old, but I mean tested, been around for a long time, and nothing's exotic. Everything. I mean, if we wanted to ramp this up, could every doctor have your triple cocktail inside of a week?
Yes.
And is that what's going on?
I think it's in the process. Yesterday, the Department of Justice gave a waiver to a drug company in Pennsylvania. It was something to do with antitrust laws. Gave this company permission to, I don't know, do things that are maybe monopoly-like, but to get access to this drug and distribute it to as many places in the country that need it. So that seems to me that the infrastructure, the logistics of sourcing and distribution are being in the works right now.
When you hear about these newer studies with so many people assuming that they're with so many people being asymptomatic, does that make sense to you?
I don't understand what you mean.
What I mean is first we thought if you got it, you got it. Then we're kind of finding out that there are large groups that have had it and didn't have any symptoms.
Oh, I'm not surprised. That's how a lot of people are going to be. You know, this virus is safer in kids than the influenza virus?
It's safer than in kids than the flu.
Right. So most of the kids are going to get it and not even know it.
Right. It's insane that all the schools are shut down, by the way, which I'm sure we could probably get you launched on that tirade.
I have eight children, so I know what that means.
Jesus Christ. I got two, and that's one and a half too many.
Want to know how these drugs work? Are you curious?
Yeah, tell me.
It's not magic. Zinc inhibits viral replication or viral growth. So the virus can't grow because of zinc. The problem is the virus is inside the cell. Viruses cannot grow unless they go inside the cell and steal the cell's resources to make copies of themselves. And in the process, they kill the cell. It's a real parasite. So what the zinc does is it inhibits that process. But there's one big problem. Zinc cannot get into the cell because of biochemical reasons. It has a positive charge, and the cell membrane is like cholesterol. So it doesn't go through. Like oil and water. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mesh. So what does hydroxychloroquine do? You ready? It just opens the door and lets the zinc in. That's it.
So the zinc does the killing, not the hydroxychloroquine is sort of the wheel man. The
Right. The hydroxychloroquine delivers the zinc to the to the battlefield. And what is the antibiotic is there for a very simple reason. Damaged lungs get infected with get pneumonia, bacterial pneumonias. They're weakened, they get messed up, and they're more prone to develop secondary bacterial infections. So the antibiotic is there to mitigate that, to prevent that from taking hold. So the approach.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the hydroxychloroquine opens the door, the zinc does the killing, and then the zithromide watches the door, sort of stands guard for the next few days.
Exactly.
It's
so elegant. It's so simple. You know, they can't believe that some Hick doctor with a beard, some Hasidic doctor in upstate New York, found a treatment for $20 that basically will end the war. I have to tell you something, okay? First of all, I don't believe it was me. God put this idea. I was dead 2 years ago, by the way, with terminal cancer. And the fact that I survived, I was wondering why God spared me. So for this moment in history, it seems that I didn't ask for this. By the way, when this is done, you'll never see me again. I can't stand the media. I can't stand the public attention. And my wife is mad at me all the time. So I need to.
But what about the professional rodeo circuit? We're not going to see you busting Broncos. Come on now.
I'm only doing this because if I don't, the message doesn't get spread and the bad people win. So.
Do you ever worry? You know, it seems to me a couple of doctors in China didn't see their next birthday for spreading some bad news. And you do.
Let me tell you something. I had pulmonary artery sarcoma, 10 cases a year in the world, all found at autopsy. I had open heart surgery. I lost my right lung. I was on terrible chemo for a year. I'm still on chemo. Why am I telling you this is that, and I was ready to die and I was ready to say goodbye to my children and so on. So I'm looking at life from that other world in. Mm-hmm. If they want to take me out, they'll take me out. There's a God that runs the world. I have zero fear about these things because I was already dead in a sense. You understand? So the best soldiers are the ones that assume that they're already dead.
Mm, yeah.
They have nothing to lose.
No, listen, God bless you. And I want to give you a plug. It's you're doing updates on your on YouTube, and you just search Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, MD. That is Zelenko, MD. And you can find out all these updates. Listen, I believe in what you're doing. I completely agree that, you know, sort of battening down the hatches and everyone going in their apartments and boarding up the windows. That's fine, but it's not a plan.
Let me tell you something. I wouldn't have said this a few weeks ago, but I'm going to say it now, because that's the degree of confidence that I have in what's going on. And I've basically staked my entire career, profession, reputation, everything on this. But here's the statement. If you scale these medications nationally and primary care doctors deploy them in the right time frame, death and hospitalizations will decrease by 95%. You can reopen the economy within a week.
From your mouth to God's ears, a doctor, and I hope we can check in with you periodically as this thing progresses and more information comes out.
That's if they don't kill me first.
Adam, can I squeeze in a real quick question?
Go ahead.
Because he mentioned it at the very end, and now I'm curious. Doctor, should people who have or had cancer or are on chemotherapy, should they take extra measures, or are you just interacting as you normally would?
Well, they're high risk. So obviously, my threshold to treat them will be much less. And if your question is, should they be prophylaxed? I can't make those recommendations yet because I don't have enough data, but I'm taking it for prophylaxis. I gave it to my parents, and any smart doctor that I know is taking it. You can draw your own conclusions.
Good to know.
And you're taking it in your triple cocktail form.
No, for prophylaxis, you don't need the antibiotic. It's just the hydroxychloroquine and the zinc. The antibiotic is only there in case of infection. So
sorry. Correct.
I reserve that. Keep that in reserve.
Right. And is it literally in the shape of a couple of pills in the morning, or how often and how is it administered?
Well, let me give the protocol and then I'll hydroxychloroquine for treatment. I mean, it's 200 milligrams, one pill twice a day for 5 days. Then azithromycin, 500 milligrams, one pill a day for 5 days. And zinc sulfate, 220 milligrams, one pill a day for 5 days. That's what I use for treatment. Hydroxychloroquine is a drug already used for prophylaxis, for malaria.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. There's so much controversy about something that's been around for 70 years and billions of people have taken it worldwide.
Safer than Motrin.
Safer than Motrin.
And, all right, Doc. Sorry, can I just ask, what about just the zinc? If those of us who are just taking zinc, is that really not going to do any good because we don't have the magic ingredient to open the door? Or do you think that's helpful in any way?
It may be helpful somewhat, but definitely not enough. You see, all these three elements have antiviral properties, but there's something called synergy. If you put them together, it becomes, the sum is much greater. It becomes lethal to the virus.
Gotcha.
So it's the combination itself that has a certain kill capacity, which is greater than each individual part.
Understood.
Is this last statement? We'll see how this works.
We don't want to let the doctor go.
Well, everyone's deal is all right, we reopen the economy and then there's a second wave that hits in the winter time and it's a second deadlier wave that's going to hit. But you're saying with this triple cocktail, it's not going to be the killing fields that CNN and many other news outlets are predicting? Or what about the second wave aspect of this?
The second wave, if we are prepared and armed and the logistics are in place, we'll just take care of it like any other infection, you know?
Thank you, doctor. I appreciate it. I told you this guy was interesting. And I hope we can check in with you next week and get an update.
Anytime.
Thank you for your service. All right. Well, shifting gears, Ken Jennings is coming up to talk in trivia in a minute. And first, let me just hit Happy Cards. Mother's Day, it's coming up. Happy Cards, perfect way to make mom feel special. Limited edition Mother's Day card. Treat her to dinner, a movie, spa, shopping spree, and more with one convenient card. Brands you know and love, like Cheesecake Factory. Oh, God. Going out to dinner, shopping, Regal movie theaters, getting a massage. I'm going to, the second this thing gets lifted, I'm getting a massage, going out for a steak and watching a movie. E-gift card option delivered straight to her inbox. Happy You card features P.F. Chang's, P.F. Chang's, Macy's, Ulta, AMC theaters. Look, this thing's going to lift sooner than later. You guys going to want to go out and enjoy life a little. So do it for mom, sister, wife, friends. No fees, no stress. It never expires. It is Happy Cards, right, Dawson?
Enjoy free shipping on all Happy Cards orders by visiting giftcards.com/happy. Have a happy Mother's Day with Happy Cards. This is giftcards.com/happy.
I told you that guy was interesting, right?
Yeah,
very.
It's got a little...
He's got a little fire in his belly.
He's got a little fire in his belly. He's missing a lung, but he's got a can of Sterno in his belly. But I got to tell you, it's interesting. And when he just sort of describes it, you're like, all right, yeah, makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, so many people are like, are up against him. Yeah, I could see if you were some big drug company and you were millions and millions into something and he could do it for $12 a pop.
Yes.
I mean, think about it. Oh, my God. All right. Ken Jennings is with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Ken Jennings right after this.
The Adam Carolla Show salutes the winners of the COVID-19 pandemic. MMA fighter John Bones Jones. You were arrested on charges of driving under the influence, negligent use of a firearm, and possession of an open container in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This happened just a few weeks ago, but no one has said a word about it. And not just because you could kick each and every one of our asses. Nope. The news story was choked out by the coverage of COVID-19. So while our economy and the hospitals are getting grounded and pounded by the virus, you are the winner of COVID-19.
So true, man. I mean, that guy's the biggest name in the MMA, and no one's heard a peep about DUIs and guns and everything else.
No, didn't
make the
headline.
Would have been front page on a slow day. Ken Jennings has joined us. Good to see you, Ken.
Hey, Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing well. We're all big fans, and especially Bald Brian, who's a mega fan, because this is his trivia is a love, and game shows as well.
Indeed, is a
love for Bald Brian. I'm not seeing Ken up on the screen.
He's right there.
Am I missing him?
No. Go to gallery, the gallery setting.
I don't know. I hit something wrong or something?
Ken's there. How you doing, Ken?
Go to the top right-hand corner.
Top right-hand corner.
And you'll see you.
God's honest, I'm scared to touch stuff.
Well, he's here. He's wearing a green shirt. We see him.
I saw him earlier. Oh, there he is. All right. We got you cleaned up. Hi, Ken.
Hey, I like how everyone has to prove they can see me. He's wearing a green shirt.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of dudes in green shirts, Gina. Could you be a little more specific?
The walls are off white.
He has an R2-D2 on his desk.
I do have an RPG balloon behind me for some reason.
Oh, there it is.
The trivia game, trivia board game, Half Truth, it'll be available May 6th at Studio71Games.com, as well as major retailers like Target, Walmart, and Amazon as well. This was a Kickstarter project. And Ken, let's talk about you, and then we'll ramp into the latest venture. Has anyone studied you or your brain? I mean, while it was in your skull, but I mean, it's like, has any neuroscientist wanted to test you or study you or watch you while you sleep?
I don't think, like, even my family is not that interested in me. I feel like somebody did say, hey, we want to do MRIs of trivia nerds to see if there's anything different about brain structure or memory. And it hasn't actually happened yet, but I'm a little skeptical that the trivia brain is all that different.
Well, I mean, we got the part, as far as I can tell from the data I've studied, we got the not getting laid in high school. That part seems to be a through line that we can all agree on.
Lots of reading.
But, you know, the thing about the trivia brain is, I guess you have to be interested, and then you must have the capacity and the ability, much like an athlete. You have to be interested in the sport, and then your body has to be able to execute that thing you're interested in. So for you, is that something you were always interested in?
Yeah, most trivia people, I wrote a book called Brainiac about, like, trivia nerds, like, trying to figure out what makes them tick. And everybody is that way, like, as far back as they can remember, you know? They were carrying around a Guinness Book of World Records when they were 4 years old and memorizing baseball stats and, you know, being in love with game shows, daytime game shows, as far back as they can remember. So it does seem to be a type, but at the same time, I think we're all good at remembering stuff when we're interested in it. Like, it's as you say, like, if you're interested in, you know, you don't have to try to memorize the lyrics of a song you like or the roster of your favorite team. I mean, that stuff just sticks.
Right.
And so if you can manage to be curious about stuff, the facts will just stay in your head. And I think trivia geeks are just curious about everything. They're like, they think all information is equally interesting, which is weird, but it works for us.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that's an interesting mindset. So many people are interested in a thing or two things, like they have a team, they have a type of music, and they have a car. And I like cars, and I'm always a little discouraged when I meet a guy and he says, oh, I'm a car guy too. And then he says he's a Mopar guy and he likes Hemi Cudas. And then you go, oh, I have a Porsche 935. And he goes, what's that? And I'm like, oh man, you said you were a car guy. Why don't you know about cars? Why are you just focused? I think it's an intellect, and it's a little bit on, I would say folks like you and Brian are probably a little more evolved, just like car guys who like all cars are probably a little more evolved. At least that's how I see it.
Thank you for lumping me in with the great Ken Jennings.
I
appreciate it.
Get used to it.
But it's a little bit old timey, right? People used to be experts at everything, you know, like Thomas Jefferson, he was an architect, right. But he was also a botanist and a writer and an academic, you know, people used to, if you were an educated person, you knew everything. And now we're like all specialists, right? Like you say, we like this kind of car, but not that kind. We love this kind of music, but not that kind. Trivia people, like, I think it's just great to know a tiny bit about everything. It makes it easier to get to know people. Like, you're better conversationalist. It's old timey, but I think it's better.
Did you train for doing Jeopardy specifically? And what I want to say is, like, I've never given it any thought, but I am now, which is like kids that study for a spelling bee just keep studying the spelling of words over and over. Now, obviously, Jeopardy is so broad that it would be difficult, but do you bone up going into that event?
I was at the spelling bee once, and one of the moms wanted to know, what's the book you study from for Jeopardy? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, you know, Priyanka just studies the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and that's how you get good at the spelling bee. Right. And she thought there would be a book for Jeopardy, like a book with all the answers. And you can't cram for Jeopardy because there is no book. Like the questions could be about, you know, organic chemistry 1 second, and then they're going to be about disco music. Like it can literally be anything. So like when I prep for the show, I mean, I made flashcards of like world capitals and U.S. presidents. I mean, there's no reason not to know that stuff. But prepping for the show is mostly like just watching a ton of Jeopardy and playing along in real time. Like I watch the show standing up, like I hold a pen and I pretend it's a buzzer. I pretend I'm picking the category in real time. And it's really all about Alex's voice. Like the buzzer, the timing of the buzzer depends on his syllables. And if you've been listening to him do this for 35 years, you kind of have internalized that rhythm. And that's the way to play the game.
Oh.
Go, Brian.
I've read so many, Ken, I've read so many interviews with you and articles about you and stuff like that. And I remember you talking about, there are strategies to Jeopardy. You know, they're not, you can't study the categories, obviously, ahead of time. But like the main one that always stuck out with me and the one that was the most intimidating to me, if I ever even considered auditioning for Jeopardy, was it's more about the mastering of the timing of the buzzer than it almost is about the knowledge. Because like, I think you actually said the people on the show, they have all passed the test. They all know things. They're all trivia geniuses. It really comes down to the timing of the buzzer.
And you do see very angry people clicking over and over again when they don't get in.
Yeah. It's weird. Like those people you think, oh, what's going on? Are they too slow? Like those people are usually too fast. Yeah, like the buzzer locks you out until Alex is done reading, and then there's a human that switches it on. And so if you buzz a little early, you get locked out for a fraction of a second. So when you see people freaking out like that, you know, the adrenaline's pumping, it's so stressful to be on Jeopardy compared to watching it at home. And people are just a little quick on the trigger. And it really is what generally picks the winner, is just who has figured out the timing that night, because everybody on there is smart. They all passed a super hard test.
Wow.
You know what should be studied, which is how you operate in that pressure cooker. So, you know, you pointed out it's so much easier to play at home than there. I think I played Win Ben Stein's Money once as sort of a goof with me and Jimmy and Ben Stein or whatever it was. And I remember not being able to summon the answer to questions that I knew very clearly and very easily. And even taking, I seem to remember that it was Who Sung Alone Again Naturally. And it was like Gilbert Sullivan or Gilbert O'Sullivan or some version of that. Well, Ken, you probably could tell me. And I instead said O'Sullivan, who was a boxing champ from like the 30s. You know, I picked another O'Sullivan. I would have never done that if I was sitting on my sofa. The pressure of it sort of squeezed the wrong answer out of me. So for you and being a champion at Jeopardy or anyone who's good at it, on stage, you not only have to have the information, but you have to be able to access it in a situation where it's like your car just hit black ice and you're skidding out of control. That's a different way to access information. And you have to be able to do it while your car is spinning around and you're seeing oak trees and oncoming traffic, you know? And I don't know how you train for that, but would you say you have a gift for that aspect of it?
Yeah, it really is a pressure cooker. And like, I remember my very first show, and I think every Jeopardy person says this, it seems to go by in like 5 minutes because right. Your brain just cannot process the speed and the stress of what's happening. So you're absolutely right. You're getting by kind of on muscle memory. And it really is like, if my higher brain functions check out here, like, do I know how to steer into the skid and do the right things with my thumb and still keep pulling out answers? And it turned out I could do it on muscle memory. And it was probably honestly just years of watching the show and doing other quiz games. Like I played Quiz Bowl in college, which is kind of team Jeopardy. And you really do get in the, you know, can you thrive in the, are you like a game day player who can like really thrive in the fourth quarter? You know, like, do you want to get the ball as the seconds tick off the clock? Like, it's hard to get away from the sports metaphors because that really is kind of how it is.
Did you find that, were there any questions that you recall, like my Gilbert O'Sullivan one, where you realized you had a brain fart or you knew it or that was dumb, you had that one and you spat out? Sometimes something comes out of your mouth that's different than what you know. Is there one you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, just like earlier this year, Jeopardy had that greatest of all time tournament. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a little bit over the hill. Like, it's kind of a young person's game because your memory doesn't get sharper with age.
Right.
And there were a couple times there where I was just absolutely sure I was saying the right thing. And Trebek just looked at me like I was an idiot. Like, there was a super easy question, like from the highest, you know, the top of the board is supposed to be the easy stuff. Mm-hmm. There was a super easy question about like Hearst Castle in California. Mm-hmm. And I said Xanadu, which I guess is the name of the fake Hearst Castle in Citizen Kane. Yeah, exactly. So I had like made the question twice as hard. I got the name of the first Alanis Morissette record wrong, or you know, the big
Jagged Little Pill. Yeah.
Who didn't own Jagged Little Pill in 1990?
Well, you know, I don't know who studied this, but Ken, you're probably a guy who can answer this. So here's what's going on. Not only is your brain sort of in your mind kind of atrophying, but I got to remember, this is a good example. I got to remember COVID-19. I got to remember the Hulan flu. I got to remember coronavirus. I got to remember three goddamn names for the same fucking illness already. So there's that, which I've never said coronavirus or COVID-19. These are brand new things for my addled brain. And, hydrochloroquine or whatever it is. I've never said that in my work. Yeah, so hydroxychloroquine. Now, give me a break. So my point is, look, I don't know. In days gone by, it'd be like, oh, there's a new guy. He's working at the plant. His name is Tim. And you'd be like, all right, Tim, I got it. And that's about as much work as your brain had to do. Now you turn on the news. If you just took the whole coronavirus thing, And you just took the whole, every new word that's been entered into our lexicon about herd immunity and pandemics and hydroxychloroquine and blah, blah, take all that and just, that could fill a hamper in your brain of shit you should know, right? So I don't think it's just my brain's going. I think there's way too much flowing in too fast.
My theory is that's why Trump keeps saying hydroxychloroquine, because he's so proud that he actually learned it. He's going to get his damn money's worth.
You stop saying hydroxychloroquine. If you took all of us 4 months from now and said, quick, say hydroxychloroquine, we'd all be like,
chlorine, it's chlorine.
Right.
I've actually read that the neurology of it is exactly what you're saying. But like the reason why people tend to struggle with memory with age is not that their retrieval system is broken. It's just that they've got so much more stuff they've pushed into it over the years that suddenly, you know, you're not just retrieving 20 years of information. It's 40 and 50 years. And so the task keeps getting bigger and information keeps getting denser. And that's why people have a hard time remembering stuff. Like your brain's working just fine. It's just the universe got too full of crap.
Oh, well, interesting. Yeah, so it's essentially like a library and it just keeps adding rows and you can't access all that's in there. And yeah, when I was 21, I had to remember, you know, my truck was a Nissan, my friends were douchebags, and there was two kinds of beer. Now there's 700,000 types of beer and I can't even remember all of them. Anyway, just think about how much beer you have to remember now, Brian.
It's outrageous. Did I ever tell you guys about the story about my grandpa towards the end of his life? My younger cousins were showing him their smartphone, right? Grandpa, look what it can do. And they're showing all the stuff and his eyes are rolling the back of his head. And when they finish their 5 minute soliloquy of just, yeah, what the, all the apps and all the everything, he just pauses. He's an old school guy, right? A firefighter from San Francisco. He just pauses and he goes, oh, I'm getting off just in time.
He's dying just in time. Well, it is true. Like, you know, I got to remember, first off, think about the last just couple of years. You have to learn that non-binary in terms of everyone's sexuality, there's new things like Latinx are introduced all the time. When I was a kid, it was just Mexicans. And then at some point it became Chicano. And then if you just take this sort of, as it pertains to titles for groups. I mean, think about LGBTQ, you know, XYZ. Yes, yes. I mean, everything just keeps getting added on. And all. Think how many terms we have had to digest in the last 3 years. It just, as it sort of pertains to our society, not even, these aren't scientific terms or anything. It's just what to call Bruce Jenner's kid. Or whatever the hell's going on. Like we stop and stumble all the time now. I'm scared sometimes to just go, that person of the color of the thing with the X, like we're being introduced. And not only that, we're taking old words and putting a new pronunciation on them as well. So there's that. I think we may be overtaxing our brains. Ken, thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when older people get the nomenclature wrong or whatever, it really has nothing to do with their politics being bad. It's just that, like, this is somebody who has had to relearn stuff five times and he's sick of it, you know? Like,
right.
It doesn't mean it's right, but I guess I'm sympathetic to the fact that, because, you know, when you learn a fact, you feel like this is going to come up.
Yeah, it's like, a fact.
Yeah, this will validate me somehow. Right. I know this thing, I can rely on it. And when I use it, it'll mean that my brain has value. And
right.
People are being told, hey, the word you've been using is not the good word anymore.
Right. So what happens is now your fact has gender reassignment surgery and or is transitioning. And then when you go, Caitlyn Jenner, he's an Olympic athlete who used to. I think it's pretty Herculean asking us to retrieve all this stuff and sort of cement it in. And I, for one, am looking forward to joining Bald Brian's grandfather in the sweet relief of the extended dirt nap. All right. We have a game. We have Chris and Dawson and company put together a trivia game, I guess, called Who Wants to Be Literally a Millionaire, which is a joke on something I used to say all the time. But it's kind of funny. Bald Brian will remember it. When I used to do Loveline, even at the beginning, a lot of this weird kind of success shaming was starting to drift into our society. And I felt like there was a lot of people who would have to do that kind of Michael Moore thing where you're like, I don't really have any money. Come on, look at me. I dress like an out of work lesbian trucker. Like, come on, what do you want? But it's like, no, man, you make great docs. You've been a supreme success. You're worth $50 million. Like, own it. And by the way, when you're a successful movie maker, that's what happens. You make money. I don't begrudge it. So I got in this habit where everyone else was kind of underplaying their shit. In 1999 or 1997, I used to go, I'm a millionaire, literally a millionaire. And I'd say it all the time into the mic. And then everyone would yell at me, like my program director and stuff. Like, don't say that. People don't want to think you're that way. And I was always like, eh, fuck it. So the joke is me saying literally a millionaire, which is now 20 something years old, right, Brian?
Oops. Indeed.
Indeed. Thank you. But it is kind of weird that
Indeed.
It was the win.
Half the people on this competition are multimillionaires, so this ought to be interesting.
The wind was blowing that way. I could feel the wind blowing that way in the 90s. Now you can't talk about money at all, if you think about it. All right, should we play the game, Dawson?
Yes. It's time to play Who Wants to Literally Be a Millionaire? The trivia game made for Adam Carolla. Let's meet our contestants. He once appeared on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And he still wants to be a millionaire.
True.
Bald Brian. From Kansas City, a shoo-in for fourth place, Gina Grad. The greatest of all time. At Jeopardy, though, Ken Jennings. And our preemptive champion, the likely winner of today's event, literally a millionaire, Adam Carolla.
I smell a rat.
Okay, contestants, there are three rounds and increasing difficulty. I will ask you a question. When you know the answer, buzz in with your name. You may buzz in at any time, but if you are incorrect or do not answer, you will lose that amount of points. Round one, answers are worth 100 points. The category is the NFL. Which team is the only NFL franchise to go an entire season undefeated?
Ken.
The
Dolphins?
The 1972 Miami Dolphins.
Wow.
For 100 points.
Nice.
Which two U.S. states?
Were you going to say something after the word season?
Yes, I said at the beginning you can buzz in at any time.
Okay, but I'm just curious.
Yes, yeah. Undefeated, including playoffs and the Super Bowl.
That's
was the
correct.
Rest of the question.
Right. Okay. Because Brian was probably thinking about the Pats or Miami, depending on.
Depending on what he said about the Super Bowl, yeah.
Right. You have to be very, very careful of when you buzz in.
Not Ken.
Which two U.S. states are home to three NFL... Ken.
California and Florida.
California and Florida are correct.
Yeah.
Three NFL franchises for another 100 points. Question three. Name the active NFL player who is currently second on the all-time receptions list.
Adam. Larry Fitzgerald?
For 100 points, it is Larry Fitzgerald.
Wow. Wait a minute, I thought these were going to be questions that I got easily and you guys didn't have a chance at. I thought that was...
They're tailored to you.
Tailored to me?
Yes.
You're a big Fitz fan.
You know I never stop dogging around. Let me get my dreads wig.
You got number 11 jersey.
Again.
How is an undefeated NFL team tailored to me? That is the most ubiquitously known piece of trivia about the NFL.
That is right. One question in all a category called the NFL.
All right, keep going.
I like how your complaint is that the game is not fixed enough.
Yeah, it's not fixed enough.
Right.
No, it was weird because Chris described it. He goes, this is going to be funny. We're going to ask a bunch of real specific questions that like only you could know. And I was like, okay, that sounds funny. But, okay.
No, we're getting funny. There.
Well, we're getting there. Okay, here we go.
Who preceded Roger Goodell?
Ken.
Brian.
Ken.
Ken got
the Tagliabue. Wait, it's me, Tagliabue.
Go ahead, Ken.
Tagliabue?
Correct.
Paul Tagliabue.
And our final NFL question, or football related. What football term is also the name of the indentation at the bottom of a wine bottle?
Ken. Punt.
Oh. A what?
Punt. We will accept punt. Yes, it is also called the kick-up.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, the kick-up. Well, you have to accept punt then, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Because there isn't a kick-up in football. There's a kick-off.
There's a kick, but it's called the kick-up. So we would have accepted kick.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Round two. Questions are worth 200 points. The category is 80s action movies.
Oh, God.
All right. There we go.
Now we're talking.
Sly Stallone portrays what struggling long-haul trucker?
Adam.
Gina!
Adam.
Over the top.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Adam, you're going to lose 200 points. In 1987's Over the Top, we are looking for the name of the struggling long-haul trucker.
Can't help you there.
Oh, what's his name?
I got nothing.
Ken.
Nothing.
Nothing?
His name is Lincoln Hawk.
Lincoln Hawk. This is Over the Top is probably my least watched or liked Stallone movie, I would say.
You don't like competitive arm wrestling?
It's weird. I have a sort of sweet spot. I just watched Daylight the other night, but Over the Top, not my thing. Or I guess
we're in second place.
Yeah. Sorry.
What office building does Hans Gruber hijack?
Brian. Nakatomi Plaza. Yeah.
During an office Christmas party, it is Nakatomi Plaza for 200 points. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Brown, Jesse Ventura, Maria Conchita Alonso, and Mick Fleetwood snagged top billing in what 1987 Ken. Film? Ken.
Predator. What?
Predator.
Predator is incorrect. You lose 300 points.
Adam. The Last Action Hero?
Minus 300 points. The correct answer is The Running Man.
Should have known that one, yeah.
What 1989 buddy cop movie sees Adam.
Tango and Cash.
See Sylvester Stallone partnered with Kurt Russell in Tango and Cash for 300 points. Who portrays Elliot Ness?
Ken.
Brian. I got Cash, right?
Give it to Brian, I guess.
Okay. Is it Kevin Costner?
Let the baby have his bottle. Go ahead.
Kevin Costner.
Correct. The movie was The Untouchables.
Oh, Stallone's in The Untouchables?
No, this is
an 80s movie. Sorry, I was on my Stallone, sorry.
Pam Grier and Sharon Stone both appear in whose 1988 debut, Above the Law?
Ken. Brian.
Ken.
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal is correct for 300 points. Round three. Correct answers are... round three. I'm sorry. Those are all 200 points, by the way. My bad. That was round two.
All right.
Round three. Correct answers are worth 300 points. Now, this category is carpentry. Half of these questions will be automotive. The other half will be construction related. Question one. A parallel length of support typically in a structure's ceiling?
Brian.
Adam.
Brian.
Glue lamp beam.
Can be described by what, Adam?
Joist.
Adam gets 300. Brian loses 300.
Should be happy where I am.
When Michigan began issuing them in 1919, what pioneer got his first driver's license at age 56?
Ken. Henry Ford.
Henry Ford is correct for 300
Whoa.
Points.
Whoa.
Pioneer. Yeah.
What animal husbandry term is also the vertical planks in a frame?
Gina.
Adam.
Gina. Mate? Mating?
Adam. Gina, Adam.
Stud.
Stud is correct for 300 points. Hell.
It's so weird. I know too much because I would never think of a stud as a vertical plank. It's not a vertical plank.
Of course. These are coming straight from trivia contests. Yeah. They were collected. So
right. No, I get it. It's
everybody
just,
else needs to know.
I'm confused because I know too much. I'd never think of a wall stud as a vertical plank.
You're too smart for this game.
I'm too good.
Yeah.
I'm too good. Go ahead.
With an estimated 44 million worldwide, what car has been declared the best selling of all time, Adam?
Honda Accord.
Minus 300 points.
Oh, VW Bug.
Anyone?
Gina. VW Bug.
Minus 300 points.
Damn it, Adam.
Back to second place.
The answer
is
Corolla.
Toyota Corolla.
That was what I was going to say.
Creating an angle or slope on a piece of wood is known as what?
Adam. Chamfer.
I don't know what that word means, but it's not the one written in front of me. Minus 300 points. The correct answer is beveling. Or is it?
Oh, beveling an edge. Yeah. A chamfer bit would bevel an edge. If you guys look up what a chamfer bit does, it'll bevel your edges. So that's correct. Bevel is correct.
Debuting at GM's 50th anniversary in 1958, what car model has been in production for 10 generations, Adam?
The Corvette.
Minus 300.
Yeah. Corvette's earlier.
The Chevy Impala.
Oh.
The decorative window above a door is known as what?
Adam. Transom.
Transom is correct.
Yeah.
Wow.
Transom.
Though advertised as a 1965 model, which classic car was dubbed the 64 and a half when models hit the road early?
Adam. The Mustang?
Ford Mustang. Before lasers, what tool was used to assure something was entirely
Gina. Gina? A water level.
To assure something was entirely vertical.
Ken. Entirely level. Yeah.
Ken. Plumb bob is the correct answer.
Oh, damn it.
Oh. See, it's weird because level is sort of right to left and plumb is up and down.
So there you go.
So you would use a plumb bob, but you would actually say to make sure the thing was plumb and or level. But Gina, you're right, you'd use a level, and the water level was a Thanks. Good deep cut. You must have some water level story.
I did a little bit of I had to do the construction crew at for the theater stuff in college,
and they busted out a water level at some point. Yeah, water. So a laser would see what was level over a great distance, and a water level is what you would use versus a 4 foot level or whatever to see if the whole room is level.
Yeah, when you're building a set for My Fair Lady.
All right.
Our final question in
you're
the
back,
car
by the way. All right,
country
sorry,
category. Mm-hmm. What television duo was behind the wheel of a 1976 Ford Gran Torino?
Gina.
Adam.
Gina.
Was it the Dukes of Hazzard?
No.
That is incorrect. Adam.
Starsky and Hutch.
For 300 points.
Yeah. Come on, Ken.
I buzzed in there. Nobody heard my name.
He did buzz in.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Well, as we get the scores here.
Oh, boy.
Speak amongst yourselves.
I was hoping if I just stayed quiet the entire game, I wouldn't even come in fourth.
I was going to say.
Missing out on some of those big ones.
I found the music very nerve-wracking. Like, I'm glad Jeopardy only has one, the time per show you have to think with music.
Right.
That's stressful.
The worst part of Jeopardy for me would be writing that final answer. I would misspell my name. It would look like I had a palsy. You know, Alex would ask if I used my writing hand or my other hand to do that. That would be, I would run out of room and go off the edge and have to do like an arrow for the other part of the answer.
Ken, I can't remember. Did you ever do any of the Final Jeopardy smartass answers at the very end?
Hardly ever. I don't know if I ever did a smart answer. I feel like people are now kissing up to Alex too much. Everyone's
yeah,
like,
that is happening.
Who is Alex Rules? And you actually feel bad if you put the right answer because you know you're supposed to. Who is Alex Rules?
Right.
All right, Max Batta, load up the screen with whatever you want and go ahead, Dawson.
We have our winners. Our judges have decided to give points to Adam Carolla for the word chamfer. It's double.
Wow.
Gina Grad, solid fourth place, minus 1,200. Good showing.
Thank you.
Solid.
On to the positive category. Bald Brian, just on the right of Boom at 100 points.
On the podium.
Ken Jennings and Adam Carolla are separated by that 100 points.
Wow.
Ken with a score of 1,000. I must say, congratulations, Ken Jennings, on being the greatest Jeopardy player of all time. Adam Carolla, congratulations on almost being done with your new audiobook. I'm your emotional support animal. It sounds amazing. And with a score of 1,100, you are our champion.
It would have been disappointing if you weren't.
Well, Ken, but a controversial win with an asterisk, but because Champer was pulled out post-game and added on. So.
And because of all the Adderall that you were using.
That's right. I'm jacked on Adderall.
Thanks again for playing Who Wants to Literally Be a Millionaire? The game that Adam Carolla wins. Brought to you by Alcoa. Tune in next week. We'll have categories like Rich Guy Car Shows in Monterey, 1970s commercials, and Black Dogs Named Phil. Who Wants to Literally Be a Millionaire? Thanks to OC Pop Quiz. Go to adamcarolla.com to find trivia near you tonight.
Hey, Ken, you want to hang out with us and do news, or are you on a clock?
I got time.
All right. Well, let me hit Bet Online, and then we'll do some news with Ken and company. Bet Online, nothing to bet on, right? Wrong. You can check out hundreds of events and games and prop wagers that are going on right now, and they can bring the Vegas-style online poker and blackjack. Bring it right to your computer. Bet Online. Miss the NFL? They have a live daily Madden NFL simulators going on, 20 simulations going on to wager on. Plus, Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stocks, even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which is coming up. And you can tune into the end of the podcast and listen to Rob Cesternino's interview with Joey Chestnut. That's the guy who wins the competition every year. And BetOnline's Dave Mason on the BetOnline Quarantine Challenge this weekend. BetOnline, their exclusive partners at Podcast One. Sign up for your free account and use the promo code PODCAST1, and you'll get a bonus, betonline.ag. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus today. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the news with Gina, Ken, and Bald right after this.